Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, January the 25th. And I'm sure you've been hearing a great deal in the news about the violence in Chicago, and it has now been elevated to, I guess, a national headline by the announcement by the tweet. I think it was a tweet by President Trump that basically, I'm paraphrasing what he said, but it was basically along the lines, if Chicago doesn't do anything about it, I'm going to send in the feds, whatever that means. I mean, that's one of those statements that could be interpreted in many different ways. So I thought tonight we would check with our good friend Michael Bargo up in the Windy City and get his thoughts about all of this. The violence in Chicago has become sort of a national conversation. It has also become an international conversation. This is the problem that gets a lot of publicity on the network news in the United States, on cable news. It gets a lot of publicity around the world. I've seen stories on the BBC. I've seen stories in several European newspapers about what is happening in Chicago. And of course, it depends a great deal on the spin of the media source. Some media sources use the gun control issue, or they try to promote gun control to explain what's happening in Chicago. I mean, everybody has their spin. Everybody wants to promote their angle. But the bottom line is that this is a problem that has now reached, I think, a level of interest outside of Chicago that I've never seen before. And the numbers are pretty shocking, too, when you get into some of the crime numbers, the dead, the victims, the shootings. It's gotten pretty serious. We understand that it's only concentrated in a particular area, but nevertheless, it is getting a lot of publicity. So tonight we'll be chatting with our friend Michael Bargo up in the Windy City. Michael, of course, is an author. He's also a contributor to The American Thinker. Before we bring Michael in, let me just remind you that we have a link on the show information for residential electricity rates. If you're shopping for electricity for your home or a small business, click on that, you put your zip code, and it pretty much takes it the rest of the way. It'll give you a quote. So if you're doing that, check it out, and maybe we can help you get a better rate. It never hurts to get a better rate when it comes to electricity. Let me say hello to our friend Michael Bargo. How are you, Michael?
Great, Silvio. Thanks for calling.
My pleasure. How's the weather up in the Windy City?
Oh, it's about low, mid-40s and cloudy.
Yeah, it's not that much different than here, believe it or not. We're supposed to drop to 34 tonight, so we may have a similar weather to you guys.
Yeah,
pardon?
Exactly the same. That's exactly the same.
Exactly the same. You know what? This is the first January, I think, that I've ever talked to anybody from the city of Chicago where we can finally say, can the Cubs repeat? So I bet you guys are looking forward to the season up there.
Well, they've got thanks to Epstein and their manager, they've got their manager Madden. They've probably got a very excellent chance of, well, certainly going far into the playoffs, if not ending up in a World Series.
Right. No, I think my guess is that most of the experts will pick the Cubs to repeat, or at least, as you say, to get into the World Series. Once you get into the World Series, anything can happen. But I think my guess is that a lot of experts are going to predict it. Well, let's talk a little bit about the crime and the problem of Chicago. As I mentioned in the introduction, this is now becoming a national story, an international story. A lot of different reporters from different parts of the world are covering this. And, of course, they give it whatever partisan angle they want to put on it. Some people say it's because of guns. Other people say it's not enough gun control. Some people say the police is too violent. I mean, it all depends, I suppose, on what the partisan angle is. But the bottom line is there's a lot of shooting, a lot of killing, an issue that has become, I think, in many ways an embarrassment for the leadership of the city of Chicago. So I thought tonight, given your position there and you're much closer to the problem, maybe you could help us understand some of the questions that we have. And let me begin with just a very simple question, and that is, where is the violence? I mean, I know it's not in the whole city. There are sections of the city that are doing just fine. So where is the violence concentrated, Michael?
it's just about exclusively concentrated. There are two major black neighborhoods in Chicago. One is on the west side, which is pretty much straight west of downtown. It starts on maybe 5-6 miles west, and it goes all the way to the city limit. And then there's a part on the south side, which goes along the lake, and that the at the beginning of that, by the University of Chicago is where it begins, and that's also a very what we call a very dangerous black neighborhood. And the neighborhoods are very distinct. It's virtually one side of the street is okay, and the other side is a black neighborhood. And I hate to use the term black as being dangerous, but in Chicago, that's where all the murders happen. You have to realize people around here don't worry about it because these murders are not at random. It's not as if they're trying to rob somebody of their wallet, and then they shoot them in one part, and then there's 20 miles away, another person gets shot over an argument over over their shopping cart in a parking lot. It's not at random at all. It's only basically between drug dealers, gangbangers fighting over their drug turf.
Right. So it's concentrated just for someone like me who doesn't know the geography of the city as well. Is one of these neighborhoods around Comiskey Park, the baseball stadium, by the way?
The old Comiskey Park is now called Cellular Field, where the Sox play. Yeah,
it used
to be, but they tore down a lot of buildings around there. And even there used to be a bad neighborhood around where the Chicago Bulls and now the Blackhawks play. But that's even – they actually leveled blocks and blocks around that area. So it's much safer.
Okay, because I remember just from over the years, I would always hear that that part of town was a little bit was not as safe as some of the other parts. Now, when you talk about the victims, you mentioned that the victims are generally – one gang or one group fighting another one, basically fighting over, I assume, territory, maybe avenues or street corners
young
or whatever
blacks.
The case may be.
Yeah, young blacks. And what I heard a Chicago policeman say, it used to be that there were several gigantic gangs with thousands of members in the city of Chicago. And they started about 30 years ago, they started breaking up the big gangs. And now it's even more dangerous because there used to be gangs like the Blackstone Rangers and other groups that had maybe 6, 8, 10,000 members, and they were like armies. But they had a strict organization of leadership, so they kept them in line. Today, the police were effective at arresting and putting in prison all those big gang leaders. And now what's even more dangerous is there's a lot of local neighborhood gangs who fight amongst each other, take pot shots at each other driving down the street. So before it was actually, it's like rules of warfare in Europe. At least there was some kind of basic rules with the violence, and they tried to, they just wanted to keep their drug businesses going. Now there's much more chaos, and it's much more dangerous for people in those areas.
Yeah. Now, I assume that most of the people doing the shooting, as you say, are young blacks or young men in their 20s, I guess. Let me just ask you a couple of questions about these gangs. Where do they get the guns? I know it's in the black market, but they must be pretty tough weapons. Where do they get them? And two, is there a connection at all to, let's say, the Mexico cartels because of the fact that they're in the drug business? Or are these two?
Yeah, the cartels are coming in over the past 10,
okay.
15 years. They bring in the drugs, but I think the cartels bring in the drugs that the blacks sell. They don't bring in drugs that only Mexicans sell.
They bring in drugs for everybody.
And there are some battles. There are
but
some turf wars between Hispanics and blacks.
Right, but these drugs are literally being brought across the country. I mean, the Mexico border is a couple thousand miles away from Chicago, so
right.
they're being brought across the country. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they basically I think that what they say is the major source of heroin now is through Mexico and also cocaine.
Wow.
And marijuana to a large extent. Some of it is grown, but it's hard to grow it locally here. A lot of it is grown. A lot of marijuana, cocaine, and heroin is brought over the southern border, which is – so if the President Trump controls the border, that'll have an effect on that. First thing it'll do is increase the price.
Exactly. Exactly. Make it a lot more difficult to bring up the drugs. And what about the guns? Where do they think they get all of these guns?
Well, in Illinois, in order for you to legally buy a gun, you have to have what's called a FOID card, F-O-I-D. It's a firearm owner ID, and you have to go through a background check with the state police, and they check FBI records and all that. And if you legally try to get a gun and apply for a FOID card, you can't even have a serious misdemeanor on your record. And if you've served any time for a felony ever, you cannot legally buy a gun. But the illegal guns are very easy to buy, only because some of the people who legally buy them, well, they used to buy tons of guns, but then they cut back on how many you could buy. But in Indiana and in Wisconsin, the rules are much more loose, and there might be some, you know, so-called honest citizens who buy guns and just resell them on the street.
Right. Yeah.
But that can
I mean,
be dangerous because federal law requires that there be records of the serial numbers in the person who buys it, and they can be traced back.
Right. Sure.
But there's not a lot of enforcement on the serial numbers, though, because I heard a cop on the radio say when they catch a gangbanger on the street with a gun, they just take it from him, fine him $50, and let him go. So that gun, they don't really seriously look at tracing back that gun.
Right. Now, when President Trump, on his tweet, the one that I mentioned where he said he may have to send in the feds, he also made a reference to the fact that the local government is not doing their job. Those are President Trump's words. And exactly what he means by not doing their job, I guess they're not doing something about the violence. Honestly, I don't know how much the federal government can do or the local government can do because, you know, the police is also complaining that they don't get a lot of support. But if in fact, President Trump were to get involved at some point, let's say over the next few months, if he were to get involved, there are several things that he could do. We can talk about money. We can talk about the ATF. Or we can go as far as literally sending in a military force. What are the people in Chicago saying about this? And what would be the reaction, let's say, to President Trump getting involved, Michael?
Well, I think the reaction would be people would be happy because they don't like gun violence going on. But I think after thinking about it, Silvio, I think the very first thing the feds would do is study the situation and see what they should do. You know what I mean?
All right.
They firstly need to understand.
Yeah. What would you – let's say that President Trump called you on the phone tonight and said, Michael, look, I'm looking into this. What can you tell me about this problem? What do you think we should look into before we make a decision? What would be two or three things you would tell them?
The very first thing I would do is look into all the police records of people who are stopped and where guns are confiscated. See where that's at, what part of the city that's at, and how and what procedures they have against this stuff, because the police complain that when they seize guns from people and they have their names and addresses and all that, the judges don't do anything. They don't put them away. They barely do anything. And I think the stop and search, which they had in New York, which was found to be legal, I think that would help. That's actually probably what they would do, now that I think of it.
The stop and search, just explain what that is. If you're a police
stop
officer...
And search. Yeah, if a kid's walking down the street and the policeman may suspect that he's a gangbanger or might be carrying a gun, they can actually frisk them or talk to them for a minute. And that was very effective in New York at stopping gun violence because you can't shoot somebody if you think you're going to get stopped.
Right.
So that's,
and
that,
what that
that
would
might
do,
be a good option.
That would be a good place to start for sure. And what that would give a little bit of authority to the police, or it certainly put a little bit of power in the hands of the police so they can make some discretionary decisions and as they did in New York quite effectively, Michael.
Right. I don't think you can blame the police. The police have a tough job. Their hands are tied, you know, somewhat like the Border Patrol. It's actually a similar situation. There's not much they can do. The police do the job. They fill out all this paperwork. And then, there's actually a kind of rebellion in the city of Chicago, they're not stopping police as much because the ACLU had a lawsuit in Chicago, and that said that if you stop someone on the street, then you have to go back and fill out a huge two-page questionnaire in tiny print that might that takes 45 minutes and explain what you think their race was or ethnic group, what age you think they were, what your reason was for stopping them, what time of day it was, and what you ascertained from your discussion and all. And that's got to be so discouraging that the incidence of police stopping people on the street dropped like 75%.
Yeah. Let me I think we talked about this the last time, or you know, every time we have spoken about this problem, I ask you this question, but I think it's a good question for people like me who are looking at this from the outside, who are, you know, scratching their heads and they're saying, how can this happen? I mean, how can a city, not the violence, I understand, you know, gang violence, I understand that can happen anywhere, but how did the local police, how did the local authorities, local government allow something like this to get so out of control, to get to so go ahead. What would be your response to that?
I would not blame the police. What I would blame is just like I told you, the ACLU and all these liberal ideas, you can't touch this, you can't touch that. They assume every time you stop a kid on the street that that's only because they're black. But personally, I can tell you, I've been stopped by Chicago police three times standing on this on a street corner. Once when I was going to college, Chicago cop pulled up to me and said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm waiting for a bus. And he said, where you come from? And I said, I'm going to college in an evening class. He goes, you got a student ID? And I said, yes. He goes, may I see it? And I said, sure. He looked at it and said, okay, thank you, and took off. Because he knew I wasn't lying.
Right.
Well, you can't blame the police on this. The police, their hands are tied by all these liberal ACLU restraints. That's what Trump could get rid of.
Right. No, and I'm with you on that. But let me back up a little bit, because I remember, I don't know whether I told you or not, that I actually grew up in Wisconsin and lived in Wisconsin in the late 60s and into the 70s. And when I lived up there, the Chicago police had a reputation of being very tough, meaning you didn't go to Chicago to mess around, because you could go to Chicago as a tourist and you could drive around and have a wonderful time. And if you had a problem, the police were very nice. The police were very pleasant. But if you went to Chicago to create trouble, it was not going to be fun, because the police were not going to be very nice to you. What happened? You know, what happened to the reputation of that police? Is it because of all these liberal rules that have tied their hands, Michael?
And I would actually somewhat say that probably at least half of the problem is caused by illegal immigration. There's 500,000 illegal immigrants in Illinois. Most of them are in Chicago, and if they stop them for a DUI or whatever, they're just going to go and get let go. There are people a black or a white person with three, four DUIs would be in prison, but the illegal immigrants are just let out. It's a scofflaw attitude, and a lot of it was instigated by illegal immigration. They can't. It's like they're sacred. You can't touch them.
And I assume the sanctuary city issue doesn't help either, right?
Well, the sanctuary city is the issue, is the whole thing. Chicago was the first city for its mayor to declare sanctuary, and that was 1985. By Mayor Harold Washington. He said all he did to declare the sanctuary status was say, we shall not ask people if they are citizens or not, and with regard to city employment, benefits, you know, and all that sort of thing, city services. And that basically said the citizenship requirement is out the window.
Right. Now, you were telling me offline something that was very interesting, and I want to bring it up. You say that Chicago is a very segregated city, meaning that obviously there's groups everywhere. And because of that, people in other parts of town, I want to make sure that I don't misrepresent what you said, but that people in other parts of town don't seem to care that much about this problem because it doesn't affect them. It's all concentrated in a particular neighborhood.
Exactly,
so
several neighborhoods.
Does that make it impossible to fix the problem then? Because if you're living,
no, because
I don't know.
Because, well, actually, it's an interesting question, because the stop and search thing, all right, is basically only going to go on in these bad neighborhoods. So then the ACLU turns around and says, see, you only stop and search people where it's 80% black. You don't stop and search in white neighborhoods. So they actually used the segregation, which is wrong, that the city created years ago, 50 years ago, and now they can sort of turn it against them and says, oh, you're only stopping and searching black kids in black neighborhoods. And my answer on this would be, well, it's not my fault they're all black in one neighborhood. I didn't create that. The city did.
Right. Now,
you see what I mean?
It's
kind of a catch-22.
Sure. Exactly. No, that's a good point. Where is the governor in all of this, Michael? I mean, you have a governor, you have a state government. Where are they in this crisis?
Well, the governor is the first Republican governor in many years. The one before him was Blagojevich. No, I'm sorry, it was Governor Quinn. He was a Democrat. The one before Quinn was Blagojevich, and he's in prison for 14 years for corruption. Remember, he was going to sell a Barack Obama
sure.
Senate seat for $1 million to Jesse
right.
Jackson Jr. That got to be a huge
right.
stink. And the current governor is fighting the Democrat majority in the House and Senate.
So, but couldn't the governor, for example, bring the National Guard in? If I mean, he has the authority to do that, right?
Yes, but that's a good point. For some reason, it's not that we need the National Guard. I think it's more in the administration of justice and the administration of law enforcement techniques they use, like the stop and search. I think the police would tell you that their hands are tied. I don't blame the police. The police are, you know, it's like Border Patrol. They catch someone, they got to let them go. And it's the same with the police. They're told to let the gangbangers go, and the judges won't put them in jail. Cook County Jail is overflowing. There's no money for this, no money for that. And so then there's just a ridiculous situation. And I would not blame the police at all. A lot of media try to do their jobs, and it's just they don't get any help from anyone. You know, just like Obama tied the hands of the Border Patrol.
Right. No, and by the way, I want to make sure that people do not misunderstand me. I'm not blaming the police. On the contrary, I think the police is doing an amazing job given the way their hands are tied. One last question about all of this. How big is the Chicago police force, and could they use more policemen?
They could use a little bit more, but that's another good point, is that Mayor Rahm Emanuel, while he says he's a Democrat and is all for labor unions and all that, for 2 or 3 years, he's had a big fight with the police. He doesn't agree with their union. He doesn't like to sign union contracts. He basically is obstructionist with regard to the police, and the police don't like him. He's not on the cop side, put it that way. They don't feel that the mayor has their back.
Interesting, because I would have to think that it must be very frustrating being a police officer in Chicago. I mean, it's a difficult job to begin with, and when the people on top of you make it more difficult, I don't know. I mean, it's got to be a very difficult job to do. Anything else that you wanted to say about Chicago and this topic that we didn't get to?
I would say that the most important thing I've said today is that people should realize that these are very, very highly segregated neighborhoods. They're 80-90% black. And that the problem is the police know how to bring it under control, and they know who's doing it. And their hands are being tied by administrative rules and rules of what methods and techniques they can use on the street.
Interesting.
Such as a ban on stop and search. That if you the police know all this, and so then their hands are tied. I don't blame them at all.
That's it. No, I think you're right. I think their hands are completely tied. Michael, I want to thank you for your time on short notice for helping us understand a very complicated problem. And I have a funny feeling we'll be talking about this very soon, because I think President Trump is very committed to getting involved, and how he gets involved, I don't know. But I think we're going to hear a lot about President Trump in Chicago over the next few months, Michael.
Okay, great. It's good to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Michael. Michael Bargo, who is a friend of ours, a contributor to The American Thinker, as well as an author. And we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Again, my thanks to Michael Bargo for joining us on short notice. This is a rather serious problem in Chicago, and it's interesting because, you know, I have contact with people in different countries, and more than once over the last month or so, they've asked me, well, what's going on in Chicago? What's all this killing about? And, of course, as I mentioned in the introduction, a lot of people use the situation in Chicago to promote an agenda or another. Particularly some of my friends in Europe always go to the gun control agenda, not realizing, of course, that Chicago has pretty strict gun laws. But the point is that Chicago has become an international topic, and lots of people around the world are talking about it. And I think that it's beginning to, you know, the question is being asked over and over and over and over again, is anything going to be done about it? And I think President Trump, if we've seen anything this week, is that he's a man of action. And I think he is going to get involved. And I think you're going to see the Attorney General, as soon as he's on the job, really, really get involved in this violence in Chicago, as well as the sanctuary cities, of course, which is another serious problem as well. So I just have a funny feeling that we're going to be coming back to this topic, because this is a very serious problem, the violence and what is happening in the city of Chicago. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Thank you for your time. Enjoy yourselves. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.